Sairam, everybody. First, to offer this talk to Swami and pray that his love comes through the words so that we have darshan of Swami. The great miracle of raising our mind and energy to Swami and letting him mix in with our life and bring us to a higher place. So we pray that that happens. And Sharon's going to start with a reading. If you're not ready, then I have something else. Are you ready? You ready? Oh, she's ready.
This time I'm ready.
Ready or not?
Okay. Oh, okay. Yes. A few years ago, when we were with Baba, he looked weak at this particular time. In fact, it was a time when Sam's mother, 95-year-old mother, was very weak. And we felt so sorry for Baba. We shouldn't, of course, but he does get our sympathies. And we said, Baba, can we help you? And he laughed. He said, I don't need your help. You help him. He helps you. I help everyone. And then we said, well, Baba, you're our life. And he said, you're my life. And then we said, Baba, we love you so much. And he said, I love you more. So I'm going to read. We just were with the kids who are so beautiful. They're such lovely children. You can just see all this love that they've received and the Sai energy, and their singing was so fantastic and energizing that Sam is almost ready to dance, right?
Almost, but,
but not.
It'll take the love of this audience to make me dance.
So this, I gave the reading to the kids. This is Baba telling us that he wants to be our best friend. Do you know the attitude of most of my devotees? They respect me, venerate me, hold me in great esteem and awe. But how many of them dance with me, romp about with me, talk to me intimately, confide in me as though they were confiding in their best friend? No, they stand before me with bent heads and folded hands, their hearts beating fast in terror or with sheer nerves, tongue-tied and rooted to the spot. Instead, why not think, why can't you be the one I'm seeking? Why can't you be my friend? It is not an impossible task. Try, and you will succeed.
Well, that leads us into the theme of this talk, which is how Swami entered our home and our family, and how he made the family a dharmic family. We believe it's a dharmic family. And how he gave so much love to the family. And what technique Swami used so that we can use him as a role model. So we're going to talk a little bit about our family experiences with Swami. Because the family is a microcosm of the world. And we have to first do it inside ourselves. We have to be good. And then we have to help our family out. And so we're going to tell some stories of Swami and our four daughters growing up. First, to invoke Swami even more, a little video about bringing world peace.
Chekutsu vidamuneti Sankuchita bhavamula nellam samaya jesi Aikamatyamu sahajivanadikamu Aikamatyamu sahajivanadikamu Varga nirputa ekade Brahma vidya Varga nirputa ekade Brahma vidya విశ్వశాంతిని చేకూర్చు విధము నేర్చి విశ్వశాంతిని చేకూర్చు విధము నేర్చి సంకుచిత భావములనెల్ల సమయ చేసి ఐకమత్యము సహజీవనాధికము ఐకమత్యము సహజీవనాధికము స్వర్గస్మ్యర్పుటే కాజే బ్రహ్మవిద్య స్వర్గ నేర్పుటయే కాదే బ్రహ్మ విద్య విశ్వశాంతిని చేకూర్చు విధము నేర్చి విశ్వశాంతిని చేకూర్చు విధము నేర్చి సంకుచిత భావములనెల్ల సమయ చేసి ఐకమత్యము సహజీవనాధికము ఐకమత్యము సహజీవనాధికము స్వర్గస్మ్యర్పుటయే కాదే బ్రహ్మ విద్య స్వర్గ నేర్పుటయే కాదే బ్రహ్మ విద్య
Isn't he beautiful? He's so beautiful. And learning unity and fraternity and learning the knowledge that brings world peace is what Swami is teaching us because it's enhanced by learning the knowledge of Brahma. What is this knowledge that Swami is teaching us? Learning the knowledge of Brahma. Well, you know, he brings it back down to a family teaching. Like, you know, the video I showed yesterday where he takes the knowledge of Brahma and he twirls it around in his flute and he sings it to us in a melody. He's, you know, what he's doing is to infuse in us the knowledge of Brahma. And we're his repositories. And we should align ourselves with him, of course, and radiate this teaching of Brahma. We don't know how far it goes. What is our influence when we do that? Well, let's show some of the influence in the family. And first, I want to show you my grandson. Now, our grandson, okay. Unity, fraternity, and selfishness. We're one, that's right. You know, once time Swami says you're one. Reaction, reflection, resound. She's a mere reflection of me. And you know, sometimes I look at her and I say, who are you? You know, we don't know who the other person is, where they've come from. But Swami said recently, I knew you before you were married, to both of us. We must have known each other a long time because we're very simpatico. You wouldn't know it. I mean, and sometimes I look at her and I say, who is she? Who are we? We must have been old friends in ancient times with Krishna, playing with the cows. You know, we must have been, because we're a rare breed. We look like, you know, there are 400 or 500 people here. But we are a little out of sync sometimes in our communities. But we're learning the knowledge of Brahma from Brahma himself. No, we must have been with Rama. What is it, 20,000 years ago? Can you believe that? We must have played with Krishna and laughed with Krishna. And now Swami has brought us to him. This is so wonderful. What is this lesson of Brahma? Well, I'm going to show you how this lesson was transmuted to our grandson, our first grandson. In February of 2004, right just before Shivaratri, we were in an interview with Swami. And Swami, you know, had just recently had broken his hip. Not even a year prior, he was sitting in his chair, and he was like this. You know how Swami goes like this? And then he went like this. I said, no, Swami.
It was our one married daughter.
We had one married daughter.
Miraculously found a good husband.
And we're going to talk about how Swami told me I was doing a terrible job finding a husband, and he would take over.
He would say, he told Sam over and over, year after year, you're not being a good father. Why aren't you finding husbands? Why aren't you looking? And Sam would go out and look, and it was pathetic. It was terrible. The girls would say, please, Dad.
Lay off.
Right. And finally, Baba said, okay, I will be your agent. You don't have to do anything.
Whoa. And then, in the most unlikely way, you know, Swami's always the last minute. At about 37 or 38, they got married.
Well, I think Rachel was 36.
She was 36, she was the youngest.
She was the youngest.
And then she had this grandson. But Swami did this. We said, no, Swami. He says,
coming.
Coming. And then he said, you don't smile enough. So I wondered why I'm not smiling around Swami. But then I saw what he meant, because this grandchild came and the grandchildren, and I just can't stop smiling. We go out for walks and for picnics together, and they're just running all around, tickling me and running all. So anyways, this is Josh. I don't want to be like a grandparent that wants to show you picture after picture. I'm not going to be like that, but I do want to show you a few pictures. See, there, after such a long time.
Can you see? Oh, maybe we should turn the lights.
Okay. So this is the little mischief one. You could tell right now, you know, right from the beginning, you can tell he's got a little mischief in him.
He,
there he is. There is that little guy. Okay. So he has emerged out of the eons of time. He has come. And there. Oh, you've got to put the sound on. This is his first mantra. Let me show you. This is before age one. He's learning this mantra. I'm going to show you again. That's it. So, I'm a very good teacher, aren't I? So, he grew up a little bit more, and there he was. The image of sense control. Right?
It was a hard lesson to learn.
I knew that we had our hands full with him, although I did have a smile on my face. Okay. Then we gave him the center guidelines. This is the only way he would read them, if we put them in the form of a paper. So he got to work on it. I said, you read over these guidelines and we'll talk tomorrow. And then here he is. Aha! He says, I think I've got it. I think I understand. And there he is, hard at work as a sevak. I think he's learning. Now, you know, this seems like a simple lesson, but this is actually Swami's lesson to us. You know, sense control, learning a little bit about
helping
discipline, and doing this. I mean, Swami has made it this simple for us. How much simpler? So, and he's learning it. Not quite, though. He's not quite there. And now he's Bodhi. He's on the top of the mind, directing it, telling his dad which way to mow the lawn. And now, this is an unusual thing. We take Josh to the trolley, and we go for a long trolley ride to a hotel, and we run around the grounds of the hotel. I like hotels because you don't have to pay to get in unless you take a room, and you can run all around, you know, and enjoy all the places. It's so nice. So on the way back, we're all a little tuckered out, so I'm chanting. Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namah Shivaya. Or Om Bhur Bhuvasuvaha Tat Savitur Varenyam.
So we think Josh is sleeping in the back because he's exhausted. Grandpa has exhausted him. And so he's just, and we don't think he's even listening. And he's sleeping, and we're chanting the Gayatri on the way 15, 20 minute ride home.
He's either sleeping or throwing a sock at Grandpa. So this is what, then our daughter calls, says, listen to this. And this is what she recorded.
Oh, wait.
Oh, no. This is, he's earned his cap. You know, after he's learned to be a Sevak, he's got his helmet in the army of Sai.
Go.
Om Bhavashaha Sajivito Om Bhavanyam Palagode Vashdimi Yoda Napachodaya Om Bhavashaha.
Yay, Joshy!
You know, does it come off, you know, what comes off of us radiates, we don't think it's happening. All of a sudden, my daughter is calling
me.
Our daughter's.
She doesn't get it yet.
I'm going to give our microphone to our wife in just, in just a second. But I'm going to play Josh one more chant because it's such a great chant.
Go.
Om Bhavashaha Sajivito Om Bhavanyam Palagode Vashdimi Yoda Napachodaya Om Bhavashaha.
Yay, Joshy!
Can I see
it? He even has the rocking like the rabbi, you know, back and forth.
So that's a sort of a mixture of a rabbinical knowledge,
right.
Instinctive, and the Gayatri. So now, Sharon's going to tell a few stories about how Swami came into our life, radiated, so it radiates down into Joshy, and how it comes into our heart. We don't even know what's happening. But just if we're standing in front of a boss who's yelling at us, and we can stay cool because we know it's Swami, and we're chanting Swami's name, and it gives us a little distance, a little safety net, we do that just a little bit. I know, as a psychiatrist, and I'm listening to a lot of pain and suffering, learning how to use Swami's name or breathing in a certain way or releasing it is just a critical part of learning about life. It's very critical for a psychiatrist or anybody in the helping profession that doesn't know how to get rid of the pain that we're going to collect. If anybody, Swami is the one to teach us this extraordinary path. Okay, so Sharon's going to tell how Swami began doing this in our family.
Okay, well, I should give a quick introduction to my introduction to Baba. Sam went off to India in 72, came back, changed, transformed. God is on earth. You have to see this. Our lives are going to change. I'm not going to eat your food anymore. It's all going to be different, and you have to... Oh, no, not quite that bad. No, meat. He wouldn't eat the meat. But he became a vegetarian. But so he was so changed, and I was scared, worried, what would happen to him? Would he come back chanting and wearing robes? Would he stop working? Would he stop providing? Would he want to drag us off to India? It was very threatening for me, a Westerner, to see my husband become a changed, transformed within a month. He was gone for a month. And you know, he wrote, those of you who read Holy Man, he wrote the letters, which did help, but I got very anxious. But one thing that did change was his behavior. He became calmer, happier, nicer. He was nicer to my mother, which was, I must say,
thank you, I accept that. It was a challenge.
Because she gave him a hard... That was the convincing argument. He really became... He had the patience and the kindness. But, and then, it was very threatening to my belief system. Who is this man? And I had read just the Murfitt book, Man of Miracles, but that was all I knew. But the first thing that happened was that he said, I'm not going to eat meat anymore. I was so hurt, angry, upset, and then within a month, I said, oh my God, I'm eating an animal. How can I eat an animal? It was as if a curtain had come from my eyes, just like that. And I couldn't eat meat anymore. So we had four daughters, five and under, twins and five and then two and then one. They were close. And I said, girls, mom is not going to, I explained, I respect animals, I can't have meat in the home, but you can eat outside. Anywhere you go, you can have your meat. Because I didn't want to be radical and I didn't want to impose this change in their lives. So many changes were happening. Dad was putting up these big pictures in the wall and he was chanting and, you know, and then the mom is going to change the food and what's happening. And
but,
so,
you know, Grandma Frieda wanted to feed them, so we couldn't just
right.
tear them away from everything. Because Grandma Frieda wanted to...
I know. The grandparents felt so sorry for these poor girls.
Because we looked so thin, didn't we?
Not me. But Sam got very thin at that time. Because he became a serious, serious devotee. But then all of a sudden, within about a year or so, or a year and a half, our daughter said, the older one, Mom, we love animals. We don't want to eat them. And that was it. Can you believe Baba talks about educare and how we have this wisdom within us, but we allowed, instead of imposing this strict rule on the girls, we let it come from them. And then the younger said, yeah, we too. And that was it. We all became vegetarian. They became such strong vegetarians. And do you know how hard it is in the West when your friends are going out for hamburgers and meat and everything is meat. All the grandparents who go to their food, their home, they have lamb chops. Oh, lamb chops! You know, the girls were, they really took it to heart. They wouldn't even hurt an ant that would come into the house. They would, that's how serious kids can be. You know, those of you who have kids know how seriously they take on this this discipline. So anyway, Sam dragged me to India. He said, you have to see this. We have to share this, which I'm very grateful for. But I was reluctant. How could I leave four kids so young? So we had two people in the home. We were away for 10 days. The first thing, Baba was so gracious. In those days, it was easier to see him. He took us in. I said, Baba, what about death? Because I was very worried about death. How could this be just this meaningless universe and we're just going to die and there's no meaning and just end like that? And he said so sweetly, how can you fear death? Death, you just shed your body like you shed an article of clothing. Don't be afraid of death. And that was so reassuring. So then he materialized a ring for Sam's brother. We are sisters married to brothers. I don't know. In retrospect, I'm surprised they went, but they did go with us. And Baba made a ring for Don, and I gasped. I was so upset. Everyone thought I was so moved. I was so angry and so jealous for Sam. Because how could Baba do this for Don when Sam was the one who loved him? I mean, it didn't seem fair. And Sam was just sitting there, you know, like a loving Baba. He was really not jealous. I was for him. And then Baba walked over with so much sweetness and tenderness. And he went, you know, I'm watching his hand very closely. His sleeve is tight because I'm still don't know who this man, who is he? And then his hand fills up with a very big, greasy mound of sugary Indian candy. And he said, sweets for your children. It was so touching. It was so moving. It was so sweet and loving that I was, and it was his first gesture to me, the children. So right away, the mother, he was appealing to the mother because that's where I have my feelings and strength and wife, right? So then we came back and...
I said, yes, darling.
And so we came back and I was still consumed with questions and I'm Jewish and who is Baba? And it took me really a lot. And how can he love me? I don't meditate. I'm too busy. I don't like... We started the center. We've had a center in our home for 36 years. The pictures were huge. Our daughters had to deal with a lot because they're different from their friends. And friends are coming over, the soccer team and the Girl Scouts, and they're seeing all this, you know, pictures. And who is this man, this guy? Is that your father? You know, I mean, the kids and one of the girls told a friend, when she was only about nine, a friend came over and, who is that man? She started telling the girl how he materializes, because girls and the children naturally gravitate to Baba. They see his love and his purity and his sweetness, and they automatically love him. And even though Mom was a little questioning, but they were devotees right from the beginning. Beth, our daughter, told his friend. The friend looked at her, and we never saw that girl at our home again, ever. She was so scared by the stories, because she was a strong Christian. And that was a learning lesson for all our daughters. They realize you cannot share this information completely because your friends won't understand. But then we could see the power and the beauty of having Baba in the house, the values and the love. And the first thing is the love and the mutual respect. Baba has said when a husband and wife love one another and respect one another, it's the closest thing to heaven on earth. Is it?
Yes, you're correct.
and then bring in the children too. And even with all my questioning, we brought Baba into our home. We had the center, and we talked about him, and Sam told stories, and you could see the girls were developing the confidence. Baba says, be lions, be strong, be courageous. And we shared with them how beautiful the students were. We saw sports day when even the girls would be strong and ride motorcycles and do karate. They were breaking wood. One year we saw the girls do this karate chop. They're all lined up, these little delicate girls, wow, like that. And then they'd ride motorcycles. So we told the girls, of course, Baba likes you to be well-rounded. You can do your sports, and you can be academic and spiritual and music and dance and the whole thing. It's not just reading and studying and meditating. So we had to explain the whole picture to them. And then we brought them to India. And the first time we went in as a family, the girls were so scared and nervous, and Baba ushered it in first, and the girls sat along the wall, and they're scared, they don't know what to expect, and Baba came in, poked his head in, and said, boo! Like that. And then, so he was playful, he became one of the girls, like my reading, be my friend. And he brought the girl, he said, come close like a family. And he's gathering us all around like his family. He wants us, he knows us, he knows our families. And then he would talk to the girls, what are your interests? What do you enjoy doing? And one girl would say, oh, Baba, I have bad thoughts. And he would say, bad thoughts, but good girl, I will help. You know, and I have anger. And he said, no, not anger. Just temper. Temper, anger. And he said, no, just action, reaction. I will help. And so each time the girl would make a disparaging remark or say something negative, Baba he was showing us how to be parents. The positive thing, always positive, encouraging and uplifting rather than, you know, chastising and yelling and telling them they're bad, telling them they're good girls. And once we were there in another time, we had a beautiful time with Baba, and all of us were sobbing and crying. He was so sweet and loving and asking about everything about their lives. And one of our daughters wasn't crying. She said, what's wrong with me? I'm not crying. I'm not devoted. I'm not like the rest of you. And I think for a whole year, this girl, you know, we were talking in our workshop about how we can have negative mantras in our head. And this, I think this was something in her head. Oh, I'm not devoted. I'm not feeling crying. And I'm not feeling love for Baba like the others. And then the next year, we came to Baba. We happened to go 3 years in a row. And he called us in. And then he looked at this one girl and he said, not too much emotion. Oh! And she broke into tears. And then he looked over at her with so much love. And he said, he was sitting with like his hand on his elbow on his knee. He said, no, I like it. And then he talked about equanimity, how it's important to not have this emotional highs and lows, but to be steady. And so there were so many lessons, how loving, how sweet, how supportive. Which should I tell?
Well, then Judy.
Okay. Judy?
Sometimes when Swami shows his omnipresence, it looks so natural, that we don't even catch it the first time. But then all of a sudden we catch it and we say, my God, what just happened? So early on, I was bringing my first book to Swami, or Swami's first book to me, and I was giving it back to him. And he said, your first daughter looks so strong. I says, Swami?
She was 1 year old. Big, strong.
Yeah. She's running around and she's doing this and she starts describing my daughter. And I didn't know, only later did I know that Sharon had sent him a postcard.
A Christmas card.
A Christmas card. And that he that he knew all of this.
Picture.
So we're sitting and she is asking, Swami, what should I do? Because he was asking everybody, what do you want to do? You know, he's sort of telling them that they're going to have to get married later on. They say, I don't want them to get married. I don't want to get married. Yes, you're going to have to. And what are you doing now, and what do you want to do? And so she came around to Judy. So you want to?
Oh, yes. But, okay, we missed one thing, though, for not for me, everything. But I'll go back to that.
Okay.
Okay,
that's
we'll go back to that. Judy said, I don't know, veterinarian, social work, because she loved animals. He said, no, management. Management? He said, no, not business. First man management, then self-management. Management? So she went home. The next year we came back. Baba, what should I do? Don't you remember what I told you last time? Management. This was 1 year later. Can you believe it?
You know, it's really quite unusual when you're sitting with him and you think that he's a member of your family. How he can do this with everybody, none of us knows. How we can be in a group of 10,000 and then be detached. You know, like he's in another realm and everybody thinks they're attached, they're attached to him because he's everywhere. I mean, you have the experience that you're with him in some kind of way. But to sit with him and he tell you just as if it was yesterday, don't you remember what I told you last time? It was a year ago and he has thousands and thousands of people. It's just hard to believe he has that kind of intimacy and that knowledge
with
of the family.
All of us. So then the third year, she was already doing a little homework, finding a figuring out what kind of management. But then she said, Baba, what should I do? Hoping he'd change his mind. He said, ask your father.
And I said, management.
So poor Judy, she went in, she found a health management, went to from California, found a 2-year master's in Cornell. Went for 2 years in health management, came out at a time when the whole health field fell apart, all the middle managers fell apart, managed care came in, people were losing their jobs, there was no work, and she wanted to be in the California area. So for a whole year, she was doing, any kind of job she could get. She couldn't find a job. Why did Baba tell me this? But then she got control and said, okay, I'll go another master's. Industrial and labor relations, back to Cornell for 2 years. She was trying to obey what Baba said. This is, shows some of us say, oh, please tell us, who should I marry, what should I do? But then if he does it, then you have to do it.
That's the problem.
Or you're disobeying. She came out after 2 more years, came back, got a job with Sun Microsystem, and they sent her to Bangalore for 1 year. She was ecstatic because every weekend she could go see Swami Baba. So that was hard, but she did it. Then she came back and lost her job. Because, you know, with Sun Microsystem, that was the beginning of the downfall of the techs. And then she got another job with another tech. That went down. So finally she got a job with Qualcomm in San Diego, and she's still struggling with it. But it's for her own. She knows, she says, he's telling me it's for my own good.
This is a story. This is a story about that when Swami tells us, or when we sense that the next step that we have, we should take, and it's not always easy.
No.
In fact, generally it's hard because Swami leads us to our difficult point. You know, he says, follow the Father, and the next one is face the devil. You wonder, what is that teaching? Because if we follow him seriously, we're honest with ourselves, we're honest with what we should do next in our life. Let's take, for instance, I'm depressed. I'm not depressed, by the way. I'm feeling pretty good. But I'm depressed, and I don't want to accept it. It's not manly. I don't want to get any help. I don't like to tell people about myself. So I don't want to do anything about it, and I'm just going to hold it in. Well, that's not an unusual scenario, but if we have a sense about it, and we can observe ourselves and inquire and analyze, we say, well, the next step is I need to get more function, and maybe I don't know everything, and maybe I should take the next step and talk to somebody. Maybe I should talk to my wife if I'm frightened to talk to anybody else, or something. You know, we need to face the next step. Take, for instance, I'm asked when I was young and very worried about talking in front of people, I was asked to talk in front of people. Well, I would have just liked to run away. I remember the first time that it happened in New York. I was asked to be a speaker, maybe it was in 1972, very early. I spent 6 months trying to memorize every word I was going to say. And when I sat in that audience, I wanted to get up and run away. You know, it was like a panic attack. I mean, it was very, very difficult for me. And yet, and there have been many times when I say, Swami, I would not do this for anyone but you. I mean, to handle this much kind of attention on myself, I would never do it. Why in the world would I want to do it? When we came back the first time from Swami, people said, why don't you start a center in your home? I said, who wants to start a center in your home? I mean, who wants to open up the door and have a crowd of people come in? First of all, they're not going to wash their feet, and their carpets are going to get dirty. And then people come in, and they'll steal things. And I mean, you know how you get paranoid about things. But who would want to do it? But it turns out to be the most power of your life. You cannot escape going to center meeting. It's right there in your home. Oh, I mean, Swami knew I probably would never do it unless it was right in the home. So when he told Judy to go to management, she was very, very upset. It was her weak point. If she was a social worker, it would have been good. It was because we came from a medical family, many medical
doctors. Or a veterinarian, because she loved animals.
She would love the animal, want to be a veterinarian, want to be a social worker, want to be a public health worker. But Swami said management. And she struggled, came back. Wanted to test him again. Swami, what should I be? And he says, don't you remember what I said last time? I mean, you know, it's really phenomenal. When a kid sees omnipresence or sees this kind of love and encouraging you to take the next step, they take the next step. They take the next step. It's very powerful.
There's one thing we forgot, that early on we were very concerned about our daughters because it is difficult in society. There was a lot, and we live in a very nice neighborhood, but the kids were drinking in high school. The girls were just going into high school. We don't know, probably there were drugs. I mean, even in a nice neighborhood, there were all kinds of things. What parties were happening. And so we're so worried. The schools are so bad. What should we do? Should we send them to private school? He said, no, the schools are all the same. He said, you don't know what your children are thinking. You have to ask them. You have to talk with them. You have to speak with them. Find out what's on their minds. And then he said, pause a minute. And I was thinking, oh, my, we are so blessed to have Baba. And it's as if he interrupted my thought. He said, yes, if it were not for me, everything would be lost. And those words were so chilling and so powerful. And we took that home with us. You know, if there wasn't a divine presence in the world right now, and we know how chaotic it is, then where would we be? So, but also he was telling us to communicate. Early on, one of the first times we went, he looked at me and said, fighting with husband. Me? Oh, well, maybe a little. And he said, well, from a small seed grows a big tree. So he was telling us to be very watchful, to respectful of one another, communicate. Like he was saying, listen, try to understand, and then adjust, compromise. And that has been the theme over and over. We know of his talks. Recently, we were there, was it September? Last year?
August 2008.
Yeah, and he said, I said, oh, Baba, how can I be a better person? He looked at me and then very sweetly said, "Are you fighting with husband?" Years later, I said, "Am I fighting with husband?" And I began to think maybe even our thoughts, because outwardly we're not, are we?
No comment. Let's just say Swami's very sensitive and astute. No, no, I'm just kidding. No, we get along pretty well. We get along very well. Was it Brother Venkat that said that if she doesn't make me a good meal, we can get along okay?
No.
But more than that.
But I think he was trying to refine me even further. Refinement. Even our thoughts. You know how a negative thought comes into our heads, and it can be very overpowering, and that's like a communication with other people. So we probably have to extend this family thing to our family, our communities. We're all family, even our work situation. Listen, understand, compromise.
This story has to do with Swami teaching us how strong the faith has to be and how he tests it all the time. He's always testing. I have a patient, used to be a patient, I'm now retired, who is quadriplegic. And she surprised me when she began speaking Sanskrit. Had no way of knowing Sanskrit, and began speaking Sanskrit, and then telling me how Swami is God. Just the most extraordinary thing. And telling me how great he is and how beautiful he is. But one day she looked at me and she said, "Why does he tease people so much? And why does he have such a big sense of humor? I mean, she's never met Swami. Why does he tease people so much? Why is he laughing so much? And why does he have such a sense of humor?" I mean, this is a really quality of Swami. He sees us, he tests us, and what is it to taste us, to taste the faith that we have? And the testing is always there. And we can, if we have enough sense of humor, we can see him laughing, and we can laugh at ourselves a little bit. So this was a little bit of a test for the girls. We were there January 1994, and a young lady here was telling me about the story. I'm going to tell you the story. I'm sitting on the veranda, minding my own business, and Swami comes by and says something like this to me. Now, I couldn't hear it. I'm going to do it a little louder for you. So right away, you know he's playing with you. I mean, but at that time, I didn't know that he had such a great sense of humor. And I says, I should know that, what that means. So he went on, and then the man next to me said, "You know what he said?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, he was whispering to you in Telugu that he would see you tomorrow." Now, how was I to know that? I mean, so you have to say, he's either perfect and he does nothing that would make your mind scrambled, or he likes to scramble your mind. He likes to do it. So I begin to recognize that he likes to do it. So everybody got ready the next morning, and they put the best saris on you could believe. And they looked really good. "Dad, how does this look? How does that look? How does this look?" I couldn't get into the bathroom. I mean.
Poor Sam. He deserves a medal for living with five women so many years.
A woman's medal of honor. So we got all dressed up in our fineries, and we went down, and Swami didn't see us. They were very, very upset. So we said, "Well, listen, maybe he meant tomorrow morning." They said, "No, Dad, no, he's just playing with us, and we're not gonna bite." So the next morning, they got dressed up in their Punjabis. And one had a little tear here. They just pinned it up. I says, "You should pay a little attention here, you know. He did say something. We should get ready." And I said, "No, we're going to go see Gita, the elephant, you know. We don't think he's going to see us, and we're disappointed." The disappointment can come very quick, you know, because you're sitting a long time. The energy is rising. You have to deal with your own mind. So when you're there, it's a special sadhana. And it really is a sadhana. Sitting there, waiting for Swami, and dealing with yourself and being quiet. So they would have nothing of it. And they left for Darshan, and I was sitting with Sharon, and I said, "Look, Let's make a pact. This is January 10th, 1994. If Swami sees us, let's say, no matter how much he teases us and no matter how much he confuses us, let us not lose faith that he's telling us the truth. If he sees us today, we're making a bargain with him, you know. This is called bargaining. So we go down there and Swami sees us. And the girls are a little embarrassed because they have their Punjabis with little pins in them. And so we're sitting with Swami, and he's so sweet that everybody knows that he's the father. And by this time, he's just a member of the family. He plays with us, and he's so sweet, and we're sitting there. And so we're going to go through this. I'm going to be one of the daughters. He says, four daughters, four Vedas. No, four Vedas. So one says this. This is really a Veda. Swami, we love you so much.
And I love you so much. But you're doubting. Every day I'm saying, what is your program? When are you leaving? But you don't believe, Swami. Where is your faith?
Where is your faith? That's Veda number one. We should realize. And that's like, you know, a primary thing. If we take anything away from, where is the faith? Because we're going to be tested, and some of us very, very deeply. I have a patient that's a quadriplegic. Has known Swami for 30 years, does nothing but chant his name, is in pain, but that holding on and knowing that Swami will relieve him one day is extraordinary. Quadriplegic for 30 years. Anyways, the next daughter said, Swami, are you always with us?
I'm always with you. I'm in you, within you, around you. I'm in front guiding you. I'm in the back helping you move forward. I live in your heart.
So that kind of faith. The second one, are you always with us? Really, do we really believe no matter what happens, we have an ear to Swami's mantra, Om Bhagavan Sri Satya Sai, that we know that he's there. And the third one said, Swami, what can we do to get closer?
Talk to me. Talk to me all the time. Give me your pain. Tell me your problems. Give me your pain.
It's like the third Veda. Just coming out of Swami, what should we do? We have to talk to him all. We've got to remember that he's there. Because the mind naturally wants to go into the physical world, so we've got to develop some technique to hold us close to him. This is a major part of faith. We just have to remember him. And the world, there's always going to be a tug between the world and Swami. And we have to remember him and give him your pain. You know, Swami tells us to give him a lot of the clouds that separate ourselves from him. I memorize it in a certain kind of mnemonic, you know. I know A, B, C, D, E, F. You know, A is like we have to give him our anger. When we get angry, we have to remember his teaching that it's only our own self that we're getting angry with. We have to try to analyze what it's all about, try to get out of it in some way, but we've got to be very careful with anger and anxiety. We have to stop blaming other people. Now, these are huge. If we can start releasing ourselves from these things, these are huge teachings. We have to stop blaming people. We have to stop asking for certainty. Things have to be certain. We have to let go of the consequences. We've got to do hard work, but we've got to let go of the consequences. These are the things, the subtle releases. I mean, when we release subtly, anxiety and anger and blame and consequence and certainty. D, doership, when we know we just do the best we can and really it's Swami that's going to do it. And we just have to take the medicine and we have to have the faith. Doership, E, the ego and the six enemies and all the desires. These are huge teachings. If we can learn how to do that, I mean, we have study groups and think about it, but if we can learn to let go of those clouds, then one day, boom, this extraordinary treasure of our own self, our own sense of I. Swami says, go to the corner of the room, say, who am I? I am I. What is the I-ness? What is the experience of I? What do I feel as myself? What is this thing that's conscious, sees all of creation, and yet is a center of consciousness? What is this? First, we identify as the body. But as we get deeper and lose some of the attachment to body, which has to do with attachment to blaming and to consequence and to certainty and all of these things. We have to learn this outside, and inside the clouds begin to part, and all of a sudden, boom, something happens, some light comes. This is a beginning of realizing God actually lives inside us. Now, what a teaching this is. He lives there, this is who we are, and our job is to release. To release all of this A, B, C, D, E, and the last one is F, fear, and pain. Talk to me all the time and give me your pain. Now, that's what we have to learn how to do. I mean, that's the center of the teaching. We have to realize that the treasure is inside, and it rests in giving up all of these reactions that we have. Swami, is there anything else we can do?
Yes. Love. Love. Love.
Now, loving isn't so easy. Love means, you know, the creative power of the universe is that love holds everything in balance and keeps everything, is dharma, is truth, is peace. It holds all of the cosmos together. So what does it mean? It means to go out and to be an instrument of unity and harmony. That is not easy, because we have all kinds of problems communicating and relating, so it is not easy. And facing that, and we could have a lot of study group on how do we face just being civil with each other. Now, what are the problems we're having in the center, for instance? Can we be an instrument of harmony and unity when we think there's a big buffoon sitting next to me? We think just full of ego, when I don't like the way this person is singing. You know, Swami will make everything explode in the center. Can we be a good center member? Now, that just brings us to another story, and then we're going to show a film to give you a little break from the voice here. And that is, being a good center member is like being the mother aspect, because we're talking about being the mother aspect to the children. And Swami told us to start a center, or I started a center, and he encouraged it along, taught us a lot of things by going to the center every week, sometimes twice a week, for 36 years. When I get a little cocky, he sort of sets me straight. One time I said, Swami, we have a center in our house for 30 years. And without even, you know, batting an eye, he says 29 in June.
And he was right.
And he was right on, absolutely right. Really, when you're with somebody like that, you take a second look. No, at no time has there been anybody on earth like that that's related to so many people. What does it mean? How do we take advantage of such a wonderful thing? So we went to Swami, and Sharon is a wonderful mother for the center. She's such a wonderful mother for
Thank
the center.
You.
And, you know, we clean the carpets and we make sure the pictures are all nice. And they're large ones with the dust off and the lights are on. And I blow the leaves off of the front part and the candles are all set in. And she sets some food out and it's clean and beautiful. And when people come from all over the city and they come over and this holy thing happens. Singing and study group and people feel there's a family. They sense Swami's presence. And Swami has said, I said, Swami, will you come over sometime to our house? You know, many of us say that. And he says, I've been to your house many times. He said in a strange way where, you know, he's actually walking around the house. I've never seen him, but I don't have any doubt, I mean, that he must be walking around. We feel very charged. So Sharon said, Swami, how is the center?
He said, it's a very nice center. He said, they're singing very, very well, with great enthusiasm, but they're not doing any service.
Not doing any service. So back we go to the center and we have to give them the word and back to the drawing board. So all of a sudden a flurry of activity and there's a lot of service. And we go back the next year, say, Swami, how's the center?
Wonderful singing, good, they're doing good service with full heart, but they don't understand what they're doing.
They don't understand what they're doing. Study. A lot of activity, but they don't know what they're doing.
Study.
So I have to bring back the news. We have to rev up the study group. You know, it's a devotion, a service, and study. We have to understand what we're doing. So we come back the next year. Swami, how's the center now?
there it wasn't year after year. There were a few years between, but this was way back before they had the. It was organized so well. How is the center? He said, "Well, good service and good study, but where are the leaders?"
Where are the leaders? So each one of us really has been given an extraordinary gift. We're the repository of Swami's teaching and awareness that he really exists. What are we doing with it? You know, even the Pandavas lamented at the time of Krishna's leaving. What have we done with it? Internally, not just been proud, oh, I have an interview with Swami, he tells my daughter to be a manager. Oh, I'm so great, you know. No, that's not how we measure anything about our relationship or closeness to Swami. One time somebody asked Swami, who's your closest devotee? And he named somebody way in the village that never came to him, that never was in the interview room with him. It's altogether tipsy-turvy. We don't know who's the closest to Swami. It has very little to do with what looks like on the outside. It has to do with the faith and the closeness and the offering of our pain to him and the removal of all of the dross and the giving of love, the going toward unity and doing what's right. So this mother aspect.
Honey, wait, there was one last thing. When we asked how about the center, we said, will you please bless the center? This was more recently. And he said, yes, I bless very good, very sincere devotees. And then he thought a minute and he said, the whole world is a center.
Remember yes, that? Yes, that's
so,
right.
So he's telling us we have to think beyond our small centers are wonderful, but the whole world is his domain.
Now we hear that if an audience listens to a person for 7 minutes, that's the tolerance. It's been way more than 7 minutes. I mean, you deserve, this is like training for going to Prashanti, what you're doing right
You've
here.
You've been really
So really,
great.
We appreciate you're not falling asleep. You're not rushing out of here. You're actually giving us a lot of respect. So we're going to show a little bit of video to break this up a little bit. And it'll start with the story about what's your name?
Oh, during this one time, 1094?
No, this happened in...
That was a different time.
June of 01.
Okay. Baba, we were in there with our family. That was the last time our whole the whole family was assembled with him, because then there were marriages and children. But he looked at the girls and myself, and then he said, what are your names? And so the girls each went around. What is your name? Rachel, Ruth, Beth, Judy. Then he turned to me. I couldn't tell him my name. I said, Mom. That's all I could say. It's funny, I couldn't tell him Sharon. I just had to say, Mom, because that's my identity. And then he went
moved
like
his hand.
And he came up with the magnificent Durga medal. He said, Shiva Shakti power. He said, Mother, you worry about daughters too much. This will take away some of your worries, which it's helped a little. I still have some worries.
Well,
so
this idea that the mother aspect lies inside us and that we have to be a force of unity and harmony, and it starts in the family, but the center is very, very important. I'm just blown away by how nice this conference is carried on. So many people, so much discipline, so much love, such a beautiful setting. I can't believe in 3 days Swami lets it bloom like this and then it'll be cut like a Zen drawing where they blow away the drawing after a day. It'll go into the ether. But what a creation it is. Every single person has come here.
And one other thing that Baba has said, that divinity in humanity is the motherly feeling. It's not just mothers or women. It's the motherly nurturing feeling, and we feel so nurtured and cared for by everybody. There's so much love and caring from everybody, both male and female, that we just thank you.
Well, it's obvious that there's been some kind of disciplined, dedicated service, love that's going on here. It's obvious. It's probably one of the best areas that I've seen. The people are so attentive. There's so much communication between the organizers and between the participants, and it's so beautiful. It's just beautiful being with you. The one on the left was for Sharon. The one on the right was for Judy, who Swami gave her the hardest role. It's hard as...
She's our unmarried daughter.
Our unmarried. She's
if
unmarried.
If you know any 38 or 9-year-olds...
We're open to it.
No.
But you know what
he has to be in California.
It gave her the hardest, but it's kind of a, you know, we're not quite sure why, hardest in terms of her profession. But when she came to him, he said, this was 2 years ago, you have everything in you. You don't need anything.
For all of us.
You are
complete.
Mata or Devi Kali. Devi Kali. And then he materializes. That's for all of us. You have everything in your own self. Everything. And then this is our Swami as Durga.
Jai Jagadambe, Ma Durga. Jai Jagadambe, Jaya Jagadambe, De Ma Durga.
Jaya Jagadambe, De Ma Durga.
Jaya Jaya Jagadambe, De Ma Durga.
Jagatambe, Jagatambe, Madurga.
Let's pray that Swami stays close to us and that we have the faith and the steadiness to keep him in our hearts as Sai Mata and in our families as Sai Mata. Jai Sai Ram.